This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Meera Sevisodhi. For our sixth Brainwaves show today, we're bringing light to genetic disorders, and that includes something called aromatic amino acid decarboxylation. Okay, I'm going to get the doctors to help me out here. Decarboxylase, a rare neurological disorder caused by a genetic mutation during conception. And the reason we're talking about these rare genetic disorders is because there is an initiative called Genes for Genes, and it's happening on the 20th of September, which is next Wednesday, where everyone's supposed to wear jeans in recognition of, this ability to have to raise funds to support research into genetic disorders. So we have in the studio with us, of course, the brains from our Brainwave series, Dr. Azlina Anwar, who's our neurogeneticist, and joining her today as well, Professor Tong Miao Kyong. He is a consultant pediatrician and clinical geneticist, as well as Dr. Melati Khalid. She's a neuroscientist and mother of Lily, who has this rare genetic disorder. The acronym is AADC. Welcome to the show. How are all of you today?
Hello.
Good, thank you.
Wonderful. Dr. Azlina, I'm going to start with you. Genes for Genes initiative. I mean, I know it's a UK-based campaign. Mm-hmm. When did it arrive on our shores, and why did you think that it's something that, you know, we should actually adopt here in this country?
Yes, Genes for Genes Day started off in the UK. Actually, it's been running for many years now. And the aim is to raise awareness about genetic disorders, and in the UK, particularly those affecting children. And when I was doing my PhD there, I heard about it, and it seemed like a fun initiative to get involved in, especially because the department that I was in was set in a larger institute that was dealing with a lot of these genetic disorders, research into genetic disorders. And so we kind of did a sort of collection drive there. And so then when I came back to Malaysia, you know, I thought it would be something that would be really interesting to continue with. And so we started off in the Faculty of Medicine doing a number of different activities, just getting people a little bit more aware about the different genetic disorders, and running some sort of fundraising drives to help to run our programs. Yeah.
Dr. Song, do you think that this problem or genetic disorders is something that's very rare in Malaysia, or is it just the awareness is low, and do you see many people coming through your doors?
Yeah, this is a common question to be asked, and just like Dr. Azlina, I've been involved with Genes for Genes Day since my training days in Australia, and you know, it way back 20, 30 years ago, they had the same problem, and in Malaysia, I think the problem is still the same. Basically, it is essentially an issue of lack of awareness and lack of activity that increased the level of understanding of people who had less common diseases, with the perception that it is always, since it's a rare condition, therefore it is less important. And I must say that the chief problem that we face is that among the medical practitioners themselves and some medical staff who also had the same perception that, oh, this is a rare condition, let's not deal with it, or it is less important than the common disorders. But my personal opinion is that it's just as important as anything else.
Okay. Melati, your daughter Lily has AADC. Do you want to just say AADC and what that means again? Because it's a mouthful for me.
Yes, it's an acronym for the enzyme that's actually missing in her condition. So the correct way to say it is actually AADC deficiency,
okay,
because it's actually deficient. So in 2001, when she was born late in the year, in November. So we started seeing things happening when she was 4 months old. That was in 2002. That's when our odyssey, our drama of going through doctors in Malaysia, around Malaysia, and also in Singapore started. At that time, in 2002, doctors in this area had absolutely no idea what was troubling her. The closest that they could think of to her symptoms, they said it was cerebral palsy. But us being parents, myself and my husband, we could not take it lying down because we searched it up. Cerebral palsy, it did not match what she was displaying to us.
Okay.
Yes. So we did our own research, and that's how things started rolling. a little bit more than a year before we actually hit what was troubling her.
And you found out the condition here in Malaysia or in Singapore?
Actually, we found out online. Even the Singaporean doctors had no idea. We even reached a point when we saw a pretty prominent specialist in the country. I shall not name names.
Okay.
But he actually said to us, don't be so absorbed with your child. Move on. Have another child. We could not accept that. And we were lucky because we persisted. We persevered. We searched online. It was actually my husband who found this paper, this scientific paper written by the person who discovered the disease online. The paper was online. We read it and it sounded and it looked like her. So we pursued. We emailed him and he gave us a list of tests to do. And we brought these tests to Australia, to Sydney.
Okay.
To test her for it.
Does that sound familiar to you, Professor Tong and, you know, Dr. Azlina? Because I understand Melati was the first... Lily was the first person in Malaysia to be diagnosed
correct.
With AADC. I mean, we don't know if we've missed many more.
Yeah,
we obviously have.
Correctly diagnosed.
Correct.
I'm sure so many more were missed.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, this is the tragedy of this rare conditions. And I empathize with Dr. Melati and her family because many of these families that we have in Malaysia go through this this diagnostic odyssey. You know, they search for one doctor to another. And actually, none of them actually could come to a definitive diagnosis. And for many families, they live with this unknown condition for many years. Sometimes it's even worse. They were given the wrong diagnosis. And it takes a lot of effort to undo the kind of psychological trauma that the family has gone through because thinking they had a condition that was correctly diagnosed, but it turns out that it was something else.
Okay, where is the gap then? Is the gap, Dr. Melati took Lily to Singapore. I mean, I'm sure you saw many people. But where is the gap then? Is it because we're not exposed to such conditions that, you know, we're not thinking along those lines or what's going on?
I think a large part of it is basically the perception that this is a rare condition. So it starts in medical school that people had that feeling that because it's rare, they should concentrate on common things. So like in Malaysia, our emphasis has always been on tropical diseases like malaria, dengue, or malnutrition, or some infectious diseases like HIV. And every time genetic conditions are mentioned, it is like given a second thought and say, oh, okay, but let's move on from there. So that perception has existed even among medical students and eventually who become doctors and specialists that, oh, this is something that we can't do, or this is something very expensive, or something that we don't know much about, or it doesn't happen to us Malaysian. You know, so there's this big gap. And we are trying to address this gap nowadays in our curriculum and even among our medical students and biomedical students, for example, to raise their awareness that, you know, this is where the buck stops. We have to take responsibility, and medical educators, for example, have to raise awareness about this topic.
Okay. Dr. Azlina?
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree, and I think that's partly why this Genes for Genes Day is very important as well, because it kind of brings genetic disorders into the fore and, you know, gets people talking about it. And I think there's also an issue that, you know, there may also be a stigma in the sense that, you know, for some genetic disorders, people when they hear genetic disorder, they sort of think, oh, you know, there's something wrong with that family. So sometimes, you know, people may not be forthcoming with that particular condition that their child has, for example. And so, you know, I think one of the mothers has said to me last time that, you know, actually if you are more aware of, you know, the struggle and the challenges that the family and the patient goes through, then you become much more understanding and more kind of wanting to do something to help. And so that's sort of also what we're trying to you know, educate people and engage the public that, you know, when we know what the families need to go through and what they face, then, you know, you can't help, because everyone has a heart, right? You can't help but want to do something. You know, you want to do something. And so we're saying, okay, on this day, you know, let's do something, you know, at least, you know, wear jeans to work. So that's why it's called Jeans for Jeans Day. You wear jeans to show support for the campaign and also for the families affected by genetic disorders. And, you know, if let's get talking about it, you know, let's read up a little bit about some genetic disorders and, you know, try to help the families and the societies.
You say let's start talking about it. Yeah, we're all going to wear jeans on the 20th of September, which is great stuff. How do we get this conversation started, Dr. Azlina? It's not a topic which I can start in the pantry. Mm. Let's talk about rare genetic conditions. You know what I mean? How do I get this conversation started? Maybe Dr. Malati can shed more light. I mean, you know, having experienced it.
I'm lucky in the sense that I'm quite the open kind of person, because when I did notice in the beginning, when I was much younger mother, I was my daughter is 16 years old now, so we're used to bringing her out everywhere. She's my first child, so people who have kids understand the pride of showing off your first child. Mm-hmm. So I took her out everywhere without limit. So I took her. Basically, we live nearby, so the shopping complex nearby Wanutama is her normal haunt, is her usual haunt. I used to push her in her special care stroller, which is huge, and people would just look and stare. Sometimes they would just talk about us, assuming that I would not see. I would just go up to them and say, "Hi, hello, would you like to say hi to my daughter Lily? She'd love to interact with you." So you have to be, like you said just now, forthright. You have to be... you have to project a positive image, even though it's a huge problem on your family, but you have to pretend somehow. So when you pretend and project a positive outlook, it does take on a little bit onto your daily routine. And people respond to that. Mm-hmm. When you're negative, when you're scared, when you're worried, people can feel it and they sort of amplify it. Mm. So you have to yourself somehow surmount that. And be happy and project a happy face as well.
Okay.
I did go through the very bad first few years when I would cry almost every single day. I was the most pessimistic person. I could never see other kids, other normal kids around. They would just break my heart. But I had to overcome that for the sake of my daughter. Okay. So I suppose you have to go along a positive line.
Right.
That's amazing.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Really, you know, for sharing it, I mean, we rarely hear the real stories and how you cope. I mean,
it's a struggle, but you have to do it.
I'm sure. I've got tons of questions for you.
I think if I could just share about another also condition known as epidermolysis bullosa, or EB for short, and that is where you have the, they call it the butterfly children, where they have very fragile skin, and so their skin just sort of sheds upon any contact. And so a lot of the, if you look at the children, they, you know, they have open wounds, and so a lot of people think they're being abused. And so, you know, or they think they're infectious. And so they will ask the parents, why do you bring your children here? You're going to infect the other children. And, you know, imagine that kind of feeling, you know, if the child hears that, and also the parents, where, you know, obviously the parents are having a very challenging time already. So it's just an awareness, really, that, you know, to teach people how do you approach, you know. And I think a lot of the patients and the families that I've spoken to, is actually the thing that they don't like is the staring, right?
Correct.
And the sort of whispering behind your back. They would much rather just come and ask me, you know. Oh, such a beautiful child, and, you know, can you know, what is her condition? Just ask. And I think quite a lot of people are quite happy to just share, you know, because that is also their way of creating awareness, you know, about the child's condition, so that people can understand and be more accepting.
Yes.
They have a...
Most of the time, I've discovered that when people are like that and I approach them in a positive manner, they usually respond in a positive manner as well.
Okay. I think everybody's assuming each other wrongly.
Yes. All right.
So we need to break those misunderstandings.
That's right.
We'll come back and find out from Professor Tong how, as in a clinical setting, how you actually... you know, break this news to parents. How do you help them through that journey as far as rare genetic conditions are concerned? In particular, we're talking about those that affect children in this Genes for Genes campaign. So we'll come back and find out more up next. If you have a question, give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-000. Tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. In our health segment today, we are discussing the Genes for Genes campaign. That's genes for denim, for genes with a G. We're discussing rare genetic disorders amongst children especially, and that's what this initiative is about. It's a UK-based campaign to raise funds to support research into genetic disorders. And, you know, Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, a neurogeneticist with us, together with Professor Tong Miao Kyung. He's a consultant pediatrician and clinical geneticist, together with Dr. Malati Khalid, who's a neuroscientist, and she's a mother of Lily with an AADC deficiency. She's the patient. Lily is exactly the same age as my daughter, born in 2002 as well.
16.
Yes, they're getting into that 16 years of age. I was going to come back to Professor Tong before we go on. You will diagnose a lot of these conditions now. How do you break this news to parents? And, you know, how do you support them?
Yeah, this is the very difficult question that I've been asked very often, and it's always difficult, even after 20 years of doing it. Basically, this is a process of what we call breaking bad news, as well as adding in genetic counseling. So the first step is always difficult because you've got to give the correct information about the condition. And very often, Malaysians being not very aware of this condition and the level of education is not very high. So we have to really explain concepts in simple terms. And this is the main bulk of the work that we do, explaining genetic terms, explaining the treatment options. And very often, the bad news that came with it, I put it in inverted commas, bad news, because in the past, it's always like, oh, there's no treatment. But that's no longer true. So I would always say now, there's always hope. There's something to look forward in the future, because even for some of these terrible so-called genetic condition, we never lose hope. We never lose sight of that chance that there is always treatment and there's a better days to come. So we often focus on the positives. So besides explaining things and trying to avoid medical jargon, our main aim is actually to educate the parents, principally to empower them to make decisions. And very important, in fact, to be knowledgeable enough, because if they were to go out and meet other doctors, very often than not, they would probably be the experts, and the doctors would be trying to get information from them to understand the condition.
Yes, I agree.
The condition,
you know,
even more.
Happens to us all the time.
Yeah, but Malati, you know, was quite capable to read up, and then you've done your PhD now.
Even before, mostly before.
Yeah, but not everybody will have the capacity to understand such jargon, and, you know, I mean, genetics is quite a complicated field.
Yeah. So this is where we come in and trying to, you know, explain simple things. And I love my analogy of genetic disease as a cooking recipe. And I said, you know, how mothers and some fathers love to cook. And I said, the genes are like a bit of recipe in a cookbook. Sometimes you buy a cookbook with some typos and, you know, you just have some minor change. And sometimes the cake that you want to make did not taste as good as you like it to be. But it doesn't mean the cake is not a cake. It's still a cake. It's just that there was a change in the alphabet or someone make a typo and missed a number. But, you know, but essentially that helps quite a bit to explain to parents that, you know, my child is still the same like anybody else, you know, and like all of us, we all carry little changes in our genes. We call them mutations. And all of us are carriers of mutations. So we are not much different than anyone else. It's just that sometimes you happen to have a change in the gene that occur very early in life, and therefore you will note the condition right at the time of conception. There are also adults with genetic conditions as well. So, you know, I always say you never know when is a day when you come, that will come when any one of us here could have a genetic disease that can occur or present for the first time when we are in the 30s or 40s or 50s, you know?
Dr. Malati, how did you move on from the first couple of years of, you know, trying to accept this condition. And I can understand. I'm a parent myself. I think most often the first thing that hits us is actually guilt. What did I do that has, you know, caused this?
For me, it was denial. The first that hit myself was denial, and then the whole gamut until I reach acceptance. Mm-hmm. That the journey towards acceptance was quite difficult, but I had to tell myself I have to do it for her sake.
Okay. And so in terms of symptoms, what is AADC? What does it entail? Can somebody tell me exactly what it is? And, you know, is there a treatment option and how do you manage it? You know, that kind of thing.
All right. Okay.
I shouldn't have asked both of you to come. You know? Melati would have just on her own. She would have taken on the medical thing and everything.
Well, she did a PhD on the condition. Yeah. So she really, I think, because Lily is one in 72 people.
She was the first in Malaysia. That's and right now, even in Malaysia, there are less than 10 mm-hmm. that we know of. I must emphasize that we know of. Sure. I'm sure there's more that's mm-hmm. been missed. And in the world, surprisingly, or not surprisingly, the numbers have been steadily increasing. I suppose it goes hand in hand with
more awareness.
Awareness, that's exactly. Right. So when you're more aware, you test for it and you find it.
That's right. So
right now, the number is about less than 200 worldwide.
I see. So, I mean, and Melati did her PhD in it, so actually she is one of the world experts because, you know, it is not that many people are working on it because it's rare.
Because it's so rare. The drug companies would never take note of this because they're not going to make any money. So as parents, my husband was actually the driving force. If you need to do your PhD, this is what you have to do it on. So I did take up the challenge. It was not easy being in Malaysia because I decided I did not want to uproot my family, most specifically Lily, to study abroad. Mm-hmm. I've had that. Thank you. I've had that experience before. So I did it in Malaysia at UPM. Being in Malaysia, you have to realize that a PhD is so much tougher than going abroad. You definitely get to finish it within 3 years. So in Malaysia, no. With all the
shortages,
setbacks, everything. But thank God, I persevered, and family support, husband support was tremendous. Mm-hmm. So that was done. But I have to be frank in that my PhD was nothing spectacular towards Lily's well-being in the future. So I had to tell myself at the end, this is not going to be any novel laureate winning finding. It's just a ticket for me to get onto the research train. So hopefully that's where I'm going right now. With her... Sorry, what was I talking about?
I've gotten
so sidetracked.
AADC deficiency affects how neurons communicate with each other.
It's a deficiency, so she does not have the enzyme to make two very important neurotransmitters called dopamine and serotonin. And unfortunately, dopamine and serotonin are positioned very high in the pathway of chemicals, and they are responsible for making quite a number of other neurotransmitters and also other enzymes and chemicals downstream, meaning when they're missing, many other things are missing as well. So it's like a global condition that affects a child. It's basically, in a nutshell, a movement disorder. When she doesn't have these two neurotransmitters and the other of its gangs, she cannot develop movement. Basically, most children who are affected by AADC are... they do not develop, they fail to develop. But some of the very lucky ones, it exists as a spectrum. Some of the very lucky ones are actually able to walk, but talk as well. And some that we met at the family conference in London can play piano, can even sing, can even do simple work at a shop and stuff. So that is the very lucky end of the spectrum. Whereas my daughter is on the absolute other end of the spectrum, where she is completely disabled, completely bedridden, and she is troubled by these very frequent, regular oculogyric crisis and dystonia.
What is that? I saw this word dystonia in everything that I was reading.
In layman terms, she goes stiff. She gets into this rigid posturing that goes on for hours on end, and her eyes will go upwards, and it will maybe deviate and do funny, funny stuff. And her mouth can go into weird posturing as well. Her body, her arms, and her feet will twist. And during that time, she will have like an upward and downward change to this pattern throughout the duration that she's in this oculoguided dystonia attack. And this can happen regularly. With my daughter, it happens every 3 days. With other kids, it can happen every 20 days. Some other children can have it even less. But it's triggered by stress. What's stressful to her is just nothing to us. It's like heat, noise, and sometimes excitement. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it can be different according to the children and also the severity of the disease within the children.
Okay. So then my question to the doctors always is, why can't we just replace the dopamine and the serotonin, you know, like we're trying to do with Parkinson's? Mm. We are with Parkinson's, for an example. Why can't that apply to somebody like Lily?
Yeah. Well, basically, as Dr. Melati has very eloquently explained, this is a condition where the nerves had a problem talking to each other. Mm. All right. They can't cross talk, and the message get scrambled because of this lack of enzyme that make the neurotransmitters. Now, I think for a long time now, I think the simple logic would be to replace the chemical in the brain that is not functioning. But, you know, the brain being a very protective organ, medication does not enter the brain very easily. And they had a couple of chemicals, they all work in tandem together. And sometimes it's hard to say which chemical will work the best. So very often, as Dr. Melati explained, they will try a couple of medication. Sometimes certain medication that have been described to work wonderful in some patients does not work at all in some patients. So there's always this element of trial and error, trying to fit the jigsaw puzzle to find the best combination of medication. And AADC deficiency is one of those difficult neurotransmitter condition whereby there's a lot of trial and error. Fortunately, for some patients, there are some drugs that are very effective, but for some others, unfortunately, we have yet to find the best combination for them. So it's still a big struggle. Now, and there lies the big problem about diagnosis of AADC or any kind of a neurotransmitter condition, because a lot of these movement disorders mimic other conditions like epilepsy, or they mimic cerebral palsy, for example. So far, it's come to such a situation where we often advise other doctors, if you diagnose someone with cerebral palsy and it doesn't fit in the story or the findings, please think of a neurotransmitter disorder, because the child's life can be so much different if you can diagnose early. And if we can find the correct combination of medication, it really makes the world of a difference. We have patients who literally walk out of the hospital when they came in so-called bedridden with cerebral palsy, unable to speak, with crisis. And the moment we start on the correct combination of medication, mm-hmm. it's like a magical transformation. The child just walk off on the bed and yes. the parents were just shocked.
And I suppose you need to be patient enough till you find that right combination. Sometimes that can be quite challenging.
That's
because
right.
of side effects
yeah.
and all of that.
Yes.
Have you found that, you know, that so-called perfect, everything coming together for the management?
Yes and no.
For Lily?
Lily has been on medication regularly, 3 times a day, every single day since she was properly diagnosed when she was 1 year and 3 months old. She's going to be 16 very soon. We've discovered that the changes are minor, yet they are there, because we did try to remove all the medication after some time. We did see the differences in her, but it's very minuscule. I suppose she needs the medication, but it's still not right. So it leads me to gene therapy, because it exists already gene therapy in the world. The past, if I'm not mistaken, 9 to 10 years, this was done, of course, found again by the Americans to work for Parkinson's disease. They tested it on bonobo apes, and it worked pretty well in Japan. They've been keeping these apes, these animal models, alive with the gene to see that it's safe. So they tried it mainly in Taiwan. They did on, if I'm not mistaken, 10 or 20 children. They inserted the missing gene into the brain area to try to get the genes to go perfuse into the brain and do its work, what it's supposed to do.
To fix it.
To try and fix it. Mm-hmm. But so far, the area targeted in Taiwan is not the best still. So now the gene therapy trial has moved on, finally, to America. It's like going full circle. It came out of America. It went to Taiwan. You know how Americans are very careful where human, especially children, are involved with gene therapy. So they were very reluctant. But it was actually us, the parents, who were the driving factor. And in particular, this one lady from London, who set up the parent support group, which also helped myself organize this meeting of brilliant minds, including Prof. Tong himself, in UPM before the start of my PhD, to create awareness and also to come together to think about this problem. She had this child who, like Prof. Tong described just now, was bedridden, but he responded fantastically to medication. He was among the very few lucky ones. So he's walking, ambulatory now. He's not 100%, as you would say, a normal child, but it's fabulous considering the rest of the children. So this disease, if you were to catch it right at the right stage, and if you're lucky enough, you can really respond very well to it. But gene therapy is another thing that perhaps the Malaysian government should look into, because being the parents of a very severely handicapped child with a rare disease in Malaysia, we feel no support from the people, from the government bodies and stuff. If we do not have very supportive families, we'd be dead. Yeah. I'm very lucky that my family are very strong behind us.
Fantastic. We'll come back and, you know, from Dr. Azlina's side as a neurogeneticist on the research front, are we doing anything as far as rare diseases are concerned? We'll come back and find out more. We're discussing Genes for Genes, which is a UK-based campaign here in Malaysia now, and we're celebrating that on the 20th of September, which is next Wednesday, actually. Well, you know what? Wear jeans to work and start this conversation about rare disease and genes, if that's possible. I mean, read up a little and just get this conversation started. I think Dr. Melati's story is a great start for a conversation. Coming up next, we will find out more about this. If you have a question, give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-000, tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Good afternoon and welcome. It's our Health and Living segment. If you have just joined us, well, we have Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, our neurogeneticist, in for her sixth brainwave session, and Professor Tong Miao Kyong, consultant pediatrician and clinical geneticist, Dr. Melati Khalid, a neuroscientist and mother of Lily, who has an AADC deficiency. Lily is actually a patient. She's 16 years old now. She has this rare genetic condition. And today's discussion is about the Genes for Genes campaign, which is on Wednesday, the 20th of September. It's to bring about more awareness as far as rare genetic disorders are concerned, in particular amongst the children. Before we left off, we were discussing, Dr. Melati was talking about how gene therapy is possibly, you know, the future perhaps for children with rare genetic conditions. Dr. Azlina, on the Malaysian front, are we doing anything? Are we researching? Are we funding any of these studies to find out more?
Yes, I mean, there are a number of groups working on various types of genetic disorders. A number of groups looking, for example, into some neurological disorders, which are like Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease, one of the ones that I work on, and also muscular dystrophy. Myotonic dystrophy. Even I need to be educated. Myotonic dystrophy and another, various other genetic disorders. They're not many, as many as you would think would be necessary. Definitely fewer than ones working on infectious diseases and other tropical diseases. But everyone is sort of doing the best that we can. But sometimes we do have some issues with funding, whereby, you know, we get a lot of funding in a particular time span, and then after that the funding runs out, and then we have to start from scratch all over again. And then it's also in the genetics field that a lot of technology is moving so quickly. And, you know, we need that sort of funding to be able to stay, you know, stay up to date with what the rest of the world is doing.
Well, infectious diseases aside, cancer aside, all of that, there's a lot of money going into all of that. But even just amongst rare genetic diseases, where do you put the funding? Because there are many types of
That's
rare
right.
genetic diseases,
mm-hmm.
right? So even that can be a challenge then.
That's right. I mean, I think there are many genetic disorders that are neglected, so to speak, that a lot more can be done for them. But it also sort of, you know, it very much also depends on a very a good relationship between the scientists and also the clinicians, because we also work very closely together. And so it's also, the clinicians must also be interested. And this is where Prof Tong has been very good in that, you know, he's been very keen to do more research in this, in the various areas. And so, you know, as a scientist, we need the clinicians to also work together with us. And so then we kind of come to a collaboration whereby, you know, we try to move the projects forward. Partly one of the things is for Genes Day, it's not just for the general public. It's also to get the clinical doctors also kind of, you know, more engaged and more excited about, you know, doing this type of research and knowing that there are scientists in Malaysia, you know, who are interested in kind of taking it up and to work on it. You know, it's just to sort of, you know, reach out. So, the Genes for Genes campaign is, you know, trying to have a very broad kind of
reach.
That's
okay.
right.
All right.
Yeah.
When you find that magic combination, Professor Tong, for someone who has a rare genetic condition, can they afford it after?
Yeah, there's always that million or 2 million ringgit dollar question, and
is that cheaper? The question cheaper or the medication is cheaper? Because I know it can cost a lot of money.
Yeah. We're lucky in Malaysia that medication's funded by the government. Mm-hmm. But if we were to go into the gene therapy side, that will be extremely exorbitant.
Yeah. Okay. There are two aspects to this question. I mean, what Dr. Aslina said was about research funding, and that's been a big issue in the last 2 years because a lot of funding has been cut. Nevertheless, we are working on alternative pathways. We are working with, for example, patient support groups. We're working with pharmaceutical companies to do, say, if they have compassionate research work. That means if they are willing to offer some of this drug on trial for Malaysian patients, with the hope that at least some of this good that can come to the Malaysian patient. And there lies my suggestion is that if there are any corporate bodies or any GLC or any, you know, funders who would like to help kids and families with rare conditions, we do welcome you to, say, for example, contact any one of us or University of Malaya, for example, where we work, to set up some kind of research institute into rare conditions. And this will be absolutely be the first step that we should do because we already had patient groups. We have the capabilities, we have the laboratories, except that we need a fund. Now, the second question relates to funding from the government for existing patient. And I must say that government has been very generous in many aspects. For example, the healthcare system has been very good to many of these patients. Many of them receive appropriate treatment. However, much more needed to be done for some of these conditions with expensive therapy, because some of these drugs were developed with a lot of research funding, primarily in the UK or US, and some of these pharmaceutical companies would like to recoup back their investment, and therefore they would charge very high prices. And so even though the medications or the drugs are there, we can't afford it. And that's one of the biggest heartbreak stories that I often have to tell parents. I said, look, treatment is there, but unfortunately, we can't afford it.
Okay. We have a question here. If AADC isn't correctly diagnosed early, what happens if it's diagnosed later in a person? Does that make a difference?
It does, because the longer we wait, for example, the child may develop a lot of complications, like what Dr. Malati said, they get ocular gyric crisis, they get swallowing difficulties, and sometimes complications like, you know, they might have choking and aspiration, and they may not be able to breathe, and they might even suffer more damages arising out of the complications or the crisis.
Okay. You know, Dr. Mulati, your story has been terribly, you know, very, very inspirational. And well done to you and the family for, you know, and to you going all out and doing a PhD.
To us, it was just sink or swim.
Correct.
We just had to do it.
But still, you took on the challenge and you've emerged.
Thank God.
Unscathed, you know, and went on to do your PhD on top of that on AADC. Honestly, hats off to all of you. Would you like to leave us with a message?
I suppose it'd be, like you said earlier, to be more open, especially to parents that you see are facing difficulty, to perhaps reach out to them, because not all of them would be like myself, who's got thick skin. I would go and confront the person and try to cover it up nicely. Most people, I would assume, might not do that. They might have a bad experience of taking their children out, and that might lead them to stop doing that. That will be too sad for the child.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
have a heart.
Yes, have a heart.
Yeah, reach out.
Really the message. Professor Tong?
Yeah, to all the parents and families who are listening, who had a kid or family members with rare conditions, please do not give up, okay? Please continue to give your support. There are many now societies, for example, Malaysian Rare Disorder Society. Get in touch, get together, and get it going.
Dr. Azlina, I understand there's a debate happening. There's plenty happening for the Genes for Genes initiative.
Yes, so I think my message would be is that if you've heard this show and if you feel moved by it, then there's definitely something that you can do to help. You can help the families and support the societies. The first thing that you can do is just sort of start doing a Genes for Genes day in your workplace or in the school. So just get people together and say, look, you know, next Wednesday, let's just wear jeans or denim to work. And, you know, take a picture and tag us on Genes for Genes Malaysia. And, you know, and I think it's just a matter of just, you know, showing people that we have the support, and that I think then that will lead to greater things, you know. And once that attracts attention of bigger companies, then they will see that, you know, people want to see a change, and they want to see these families better supported. And that can, you know, help us in many of our proposed programs in the future to get the public more engaged.
Wonderful. Thank you all, and all the best. Remember, 20th of September, Genes for Genes.
Genes.
They're on Facebook. That's JEANS for FORGENES Malaysia, Genes for Genes Malaysia. You want to like the Facebook page and be a part of that community.
Absolutely.
Thank you all very much for joining me today. That was Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, a neurogeneticist, Professor Tong Miao Kiong, he's a consultant pediatrician and clinical geneticist, and of course Dr. Melati Khalid, a neuroscientist and mother of Lily, who has an AADC deficiency on the bigger picture. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.